out, and we rely on quick delivery when we deliver goods to people. If you were to pick a distribution center in this country to get involved in the distribution of goods, about the last place you would pick would be Portland, Oregon. It's too far away from the geographic center of the country. So we start with a huge handicap to begin with. We compete with people located in the Midwest and on the East Coast. We rely on being able to compete with them by having a good transportation structure that moves goods rapidly. To the extent that we can't do that, we lose that competitive edge. And let me tell you, in the internet world, it's measured in hours, not days. So the rightly or wrongly, people expect that kind of service. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Remember, you're building not just a bridge between two cities and two states, but a bridge to the future. Support it, please.
Mayor Potter, commissioners, my name is Phil Kalber, president of Kalber Company, a member of the Portland Business Alliance, director of board of directors, which has named this Columbia River Crossing its number one transportation policy, as Marion Hayes mentioned earlier. I also served on the original I-5 Trade and Transportation Partnership Task Force convened by the governors of Oregon and Washington in 1999 to analyze the issues facing the I-5 corridor in the Portland-Vancouver area. This broad-based group developed a strategic plan to address growing congestions and safety problems in the corridor and issued its report in January of 2000. This task force concluded that there was a need immediately to take steps to address the challenges in the I-5 corridor, including a multimodal replacement structure for the river crossing. It is now 9 years later, and as the plan has developed, and particularly in the last 3.5 years, where a lot of meat has been put on the project, we can now see a clear answer to the situation that has been with us for over a decade. A replacement bridge that includes tolls and light rail extension to Vancouver. The extensive analysis shows that this multimodal situation is the best way to address increasing congestion and safety and reduce vehicles traveling over the bridge when compared to a no-build option. We've heard about freight mobility. I'd like to address one other issue, and that is, what does it mean to downtown Portland? Portland is the financial, employment, arts, and culture center of the region. Our businesses here rely on a labor and customer pool that is drawn in from the entire region, just like Vancouver downtown is also creating a cultural center. We need to be able to move people in and out of these areas, and this replacement bridge will be an integral part of that. Thank you.
The next three are Brian, I believe it's Kappa on North Campbell, Jack Miller, Jim Laby, how about Jeremiah Bauman? Jamie Magra on Northeast Ainsworth. Okay, thanks.
Read the next name too.
Were you called? Okay, I think we've got three. Yeah, that's fine. And they'll be followed by Jeffrey Bernards, Martha Perez, and Pamela Akey.
Mayor Potter, City Council, my name is Jim Labby. I'm here today representing Audubon Society of Portland. Thanks for the opportunity to provide testimony. We are here in full support of the request by the Coalition for a Little Future and others asking you to reject the locally preferred alternative. We really hope the council will not surrender the critical leverage that you have at this point in determining the outcome of this process and prevent the potential massive 10 to 14 lane freeway replacement bridge proposed by the CRC staff. I just want to hit on two really key points, two issues that have been that I think need a little more emphasis. The first is the opportunity costs that are at stake, and I really think it's important that the council grapple with the potential fiscal impacts of this project. I think the 4.2, everyone knows that's conservative, and the potential for cost overruns have a huge potential to whatever the funding source, federal, state, or local, to displace other priorities we have in this region for transportation, natural resources, and otherwise. We're particularly concerned that this is going to leak over and really impact the city, the extent to which the city can address other priorities that are important to our communities, not just transportation. The transportation ones are significant enough, I think, in terms of where we want to go in this region in terms of a land use strategy and a more diverse transportation system. So it's a potential double whammy, both in the direct and cumulative impacts of this bridge and the forsaking of opportunities to make smarter public investments. The other issue is, my 20 seconds left, is around the natural resource impacts of this project. And I'll just quickly say, and I'll use most of my time, that the draft DIS reports approximately 290 acres of natural areas, significant wildlife habitat in the 1,300-acre project area that would be impacted. They don't go beyond much of that, beyond that, in terms of information of where and how much. But we know it's going to include places like Vanport Wetlands, 90-acre-plus Vanport Wetlands. There's a lot here that we're becoming increasingly concerned about as we dig deeper into the draft DAIS. So I would urge you to, again, reject the proposed local preferred alternative so we can address some of these issues. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor, members of the Commission. My name is Jeremiah Bauman. I'm the Program Director with Environment Oregon. I have not been before City Council before, so you may not be familiar. Environment Oregon is the new home of OSPIRG's environmental program. We have about 30,000 members across the state, including 12,000 in Portland. The reason I have not been here is our top priority is global warming solutions at the state level, where I have to confess most of our work consists of convincing the state to follow Portland's lead, as much of the country and the world, indeed, is looking to do these days. So I don't have to tell the members of the City Council that global warming is the paramount challenge of our time. I also don't need to go into a lot of detail about what that means for transportation projects. As Commissioner Adams' opinion piece in the Oregonian today hit the nail on the head, reducing vehicle miles traveled is the most important goal for transportation projects when it comes to addressing the problem of global warming. We did a study of the national scene and what it would take to meet national goals. If we had 40 miles per gallon cars by 2020, which is stronger than Congress is so far willing to do, if we had a 10% reduction in carbon content of fuels by 2020, we would still need to keep vehicle miles traveled at about today's levels in order to meet just the 2020 goals for global warming pollution reduction. Unfortunately, the goal of reducing vehicle miles traveled is exactly where this project falls completely flat. The locally preferred alternative that has been advanced plans on a 40% increase in vehicle miles traveled and spends $40 billion making room for that increase. It's a little hard to figure out exactly how it works the way the DEIS is structured, but the three quick things you can look at are on the charts I think have been handed out to you. The short story is that vehicle trips across I-5 increase 40% if we do nothing. We only do 3% better than that under the preferred option. So we spend $4 billion for a 3% improvement over business as usual. That's, I would dare say, on a 20-year planning time frame, probably within the margin of error. But the scenario is actually worse than that because this project would actually increase vehicle traffic on I-205 so that the total vehicle trips across both freeway bridges are now only a 0.76% improvement over business as usual. That second chart there, if you squint really hard, you might be able to tell there's a difference. And finally, you have to look outside the DEIS, but in a Q&A document, planners point out that total regional vehicle miles traveled would increase slightly by 0.1%, again, an indistinguishable margin from business as usual with this bridge. So the bridge is a $4 billion commitment to a 40% increase in vehicle traffic in the metro region.
Good afternoon, Mayor Potter, members of the council. I'm Jamie Megra, a business agent with Ironworks Local 29 here in Portland, Oregon. On behalf of our 1,400 members, we fully support the recommendations of the Columbia River Crossing Task Force concerning the replacement of the old I-5 bridge with a new bridge with light rail capabilities. As you know, Ironworkers Local 29 has played an integral part in building the beautiful Portland skyline for over 107 years. Our members live and work in communities all over the state of Oregon and Southwest Washington. The majority of our members live in the Tri-County area and Clark County. I understand that the council had voted on a resolution in favor of the crossing project a few weeks back, and I urge the city council to vote yes to further our goals and move this project forward. You know, we've heard a lot of testimony today. This project has been studied over 13 years that I know of, and we've just about studied it to death, and we're at the point where it is just about studied to death. Another 13 years, there was someone mentioned earlier about an A and B plan. Well, the C plan is that in another 13 years, this bridge, when we will have to replace it, is going to cost 10 to 20 times more than the cost right now. We want this project to go forward without any more delays. It's good for the future economic development. And these workers in these communities around here, that's how we keep our communities growing and going, is by putting these members to work and sending our kids to school, paying our taxes, and I would appreciate it if you vote yes. And I also thank you for the opportunity to address the issue. Thank you.
Can I ask Jim a question, Sam? Yes. Jim, Mike Howe talked about the Vanport wetlands and the impact of this bridge. Is there a specific mitigation plan that you recommend we take a look at?
Well, it's very difficult to mitigate a 90-acre parcel in the Columbia Slough. I mean, it's a landscape that's already suffered immensely from 100-plus years of urban development. And it's also already, it is a mitigation site. So we're talking about mitigating the mitigation site,
is there something specific to what this planning process that you're recommending we consider in terms of mitigating the potential impact on the wetlands?
I didn't come with any specific ideas. I would just point out that it's hard to know the nature of the impact. It looks like it would be affected by interchange there, and I just can't imagine how you would mitigate for a natural area that size in the existing landscape. I'm sure there'd be interest. One of the other issues I didn't get a chance to mention is around West Hayden Island. I think we're very interested in protecting West Hayden Island, and I think if it comes to that, I think that that might be something we would want to see on the table is protection and permanent protection of West Hayden Island. Just throw that out.
Sorry, Jim. It's not a foregone conclusion that the wetlands will be impacted. There are a variety of different options that have been put out there for discussion in this next phase, but one of the options there's also, I think we're going to hear from David Wolfson as well, who's got concerns, who manages the Expo Center, about impacts on the Expo Center. So it's an incredibly important issue to get out on the table and in the public discussion, but it's not a given that we have to impact the wetlands.
The next three are Jeffrey Bernards. Martha Perez, Pamela Ake, thank you, sorry. And they'll be followed by Jeremy Ginsburg, Joe Esconde, and David Wilson. Thanks,
Martha. You state your name for the record. Why don't you begin?
Jeff Bernards. I'm just here basically for the CO2 thing and the fiscal responsibility of the state legislature or the city council. But I think that a lot of people who support it want to wait till tolling. I think that they should be tolling today to start saving some money to do that, because the cost of this is almost twice what we spent totally to build MAX. I mean, and that has been a big benefit to a lot of communities, and to spend that kind of money for 2 miles isn't really worth it. I mean, you know, the $4.2 billion isn't written in concrete, it's written on water. It was just like the Convention Center Hotel, that's been increased now 30%. It's like they get everyone to bite on the low price, and then all of a sudden, well, okay, let's do it. Oh, by the way, it's now $6 billion. So I think that the infrastructure in Portland has just imploded. I mean, how can you have this golden bridge coming to a city that is actually falling apart? I don't know if you guys drive around, but I ride my bike a lot around town, and the roads are in deplorable condition, and we can't even replace the Selwood Bridge for $130 million or $200 million, but all of a sudden we can find $4.2 billion to spend. And I think we just have way too many needs, you know. I think that we need to be part of the new economy, because an economy built on finite resources, the trucking and transportation like that, is really short-term. And I think if that, if we invest in building a mass transit bridge over the I-5 and a bike thing, is, and fixing those bridges is fine. And that money could use to fix Portland's roads, which are in deplorable position right now, condition. So anyway, that's how I feel about it. I could go on, but I had too much. So we need to toll it too. They had, the toll that I saw on the paper was $2. The cost was $13 per crossing. So I think the toll needs to be $5 or $8. And people, they don't realize what the real costs are. And when they start paying it, I think some of the people who are supporting start paying $5 across the bridge every time, or $8, might change their mind. Okay.
Hi, thank you. I'm Martha Perez, and you are invited to the funeral for oil from 5 to 7, or watch it on TV. I'm willing to do a compromise. I believe in green jobs, and I believe in saving the environment. It's not really, why do we always talk about it in terms of conflict when it could complement one another? If you do build a small, modest bridge, make sure to increase jobs for people north of Columbia River. What else? And conservation, I've learned, is important, as well as alternative energy sources. What else? I work in downtown, and all of my coworkers live in Washington or outside of Portland, and they have to commute. And so... And nobody talked about a tunnel underneath the Columbia River. Would that be an alternative possibility? I don't know. But whatever you decide, I would be willing to compromise. And that's it. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Pamela Ake, and I represent the Northwest Industrial Neighborhood Association. And Nina has participated in public discussions about the needed improvements to the river crossing for decades. And Nina has publicly supported the need for a new multimodal crossing. Now, speaking from personal experience, I own an employment agency. And employers want to draw from a large geographic area as possible to ensure that they see the best candidates for the jobs. If workers can't get from one side of the region to the other in a reasonable amount of time, this will reduce the business's ability to attract the best people. From the workers' perspective, congestion reduces the choices of the workplace. From an economic standpoint, this is one big region, and the transportation infrastructure needs to be built to serve the entire region. Monster.com, the large internet job board, continually asks candidates, why do you want to change jobs? And commuting time has recently moved from number 3 or 4 to number 1. Now, the recommended project has light rail, which is important for moving the commuters. It has a great bike and pedestrian component, which also is important. Finally, the recommended project will include enough travel lanes so that safety will be improved at many exits and entrances to the freeway. Nina asked you to support the replacement bridge with the light rail and the bike and pedestrian. Thank you.
The next three are Jeremy Ginsburg, Joe Esconde, and David Wilson. They'll be followed by, I believe it's Marcella Alcaraz on North Vancouver, Althea Hayden, and Jason Worcester.
Please go ahead.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Ginsburg, and as opposed to yes, but, or no, but, let me say no, no, 1,000 times no. My horror that this has gotten to this point with absolutely no public discussion, and that a public comment period, I had to wait through an hour of
all of my factual statements were contained within stuff said by Robert Liberty and Chris Smith. The numbers are overwhelmingly clear that this is insane, but what I'm particularly offended by a democracy's claim that you can come to a decision and then have public comment upon it. And I don't know how I can convince you to change your mind about that and actually start to accept public input, especially when there's so many reasons not to proceed with this. I was pleased to see Robert Liberty walk out of here with a helmet, and I think that several of you behind the dais of government there have attempted to present yourself as greenwashed, and this is one of the brownest projects that I've ever come across, and I'm seriously offended that you're continuing to fly through with it. I'm just nauseated. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Mayor Potter, members of the council, my name is David Wilson, and I'm Chief Executive Officer of the Metropolitan Exposition Recreation Commission, a mouthful, we will use the term MERC. We manage the Oregon Convention Center, the Expo Center, as well as the Portland Center for Performing Arts on behalf of the city. I want to discuss a few concerns that we have about the CRC, particularly about the Marine Drive interchange option. I appreciate that today your efforts are on a much more threshold issue than getting into specifics of certain interchanges, but arguably Marine Drive is one of the most important, most expensive, and complex aspects of the project. First about MERC, our mission is to serve as a catalyst as well as an advocate for community culture and economic development in the region via the facilities that we manage. The Expo Center is a major regional facility and serving consumer trade shows, community, public events, corporate events. It's the largest exposition center of its kind in the West. It is a fully self-supporting, publicly owned facility. It receives no tax subsidy or underwriting. It exists solely on its ability to build its business by taking care of its clients and the public that come there. While some of the facility dates back to the 1920s, the vast majority is a very modern facility. In the last 10 years, over 250,000 square feet of exhibit space has been developed in excess of over $30 million of investment. It's a significant community and economic asset, hosts over 500,000 people a year that come to our facilities, over 100 different events. The Expo is potentially significantly impacted by the Marine Drive interchange. A couple of options about rerouting it have been proposed by the City of Portland Planning and Transportation, including a southern alignment that will go around the backside, one alignment that will go through us, and there are significant concerns to be able to protect this asset, which is our job at MERC. We are in the middle of doing our master planning for the future of Expo. We look forward to working with you, but I would ask that you consider the future of Expo and its role in the community and economy as we move forward with this project. Thank you.
excuse me. Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and commissioners. My name is Joe Esmond. I am a business agent for the IBW Local 48, and we represent 4,000 electricians here in this area. And we also are a proud member of the Portland Business Alliance. So we're coming out with a pair of hats. I am here on behalf of John Molis, who is the Executive Secretary of the Columbia Pacific Building Trades. He's had a conflict and can't make it. And he asked me to read this correspondence into the official record. Please accept this letter as official notification that the Columbia Pacific Building and Construction Trades Council supports the Columbia River Crossing Task Force, i.e. CRC, about the recommendation to build a replacement I-5 bridge with light rail. Due to a conflict, I will not be able to attend this afternoon's scheduled hearing, but please know that my council and all of its affiliates, which are about 18,000 people, are solidly in favor of the CRC recommendation. It is my understanding that the Portland City Council unanimously passed a resolution in favor of the CRC project 2 weeks ago. I sincerely hope that the council will now follow through with a unanimous yes vote to move this project forward. Any delays would threaten the project, so now is the time to move forward to ensure this important project is funded and built for our region. It is the right project at the right time for our region's infrastructure and economy. If you have any questions, feel free to contact me. Sincerely, John Mullis.
That's it.
Thank you, folks. Thank you.
The next three are, I believe the name is Marlika, maybe Elkantar on North Vancouver. Sorry. Althea Hayden and Jason Worcester. They'll be followed by David Garlock, Bill Burgell, and James Posey.
Please state your name for the record when you speak, and go ahead and begin.
Marcela Alcantar with Alcantar & Associates. I'm a small business owner. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today and share with my thoughts about this CRC opportunity and construction project. I come from a country from Mexico that when there is no opportunities in construction, you basically delay opportunities in all areas, education, opportunities for job, opportunities for trade. So I fully support the idea of constructing a new bridge. I'm a civil engineer, and I understand the concepts of being a new bridge and the cost and everything that goes along with it, as well as the opportunities that this presents for women and minority in this region. I would like to focus my few minutes to talk to you about the opportunities for small businesses. I have been approaching the current partner for engineering opportunities, and they have been very limited. So I hear loud and clear that you are committed to bring those opportunities aboard for the construction phase. But we minorities also, it's very critical, especially for women also, to work in science and serve as role models. And currently, the only two firms that participate in that business is two small businesses, one that it's recognized nationally as the biggest small business, and the second one who graduated from because he's making too much money. So I don't see those two firms as being disadvantaged. I hopefully you guys put a critical face on what is a disadvantaged business in participation in all areas of, especially in the areas of engineering or not just public service, but the main course. Thank you.
All right. I didn't realize I was going next. My name is Althea Hayden, and I'm a Portland native. I actually don't live in Portland right now because I'm going to school out of the region. And just to give you a perspective of how critical this issue strikes me. I'm spending one of my only afternoons. I get to spend 2 weeks in Oregon this year with my time off from school, and I'm spending one here. So I'm just here to support the no but position. It seems like it's boiled down to yes but, no but. Well, this is me registering my support for no but. And why you care? Well, because I vote, and there are a lot of other people who are like me, who didn't take the time to come down and take up the minute or two that I get. So thank you.
Hello, my name is Jason Worcester. Commissioner Fish, as a new commissioner, I would ask you to define yourself by voting to take more time to listen to the residents of Portland and hear their needs for affordable housing. I haven't heard much, but one of the reasons why congestion is so bad on the I-5 bridge is for affordable housing in our Clark County. A larger bridge to affordable housing in another state is not my idea of a solution to that issue. Commissioner Leonard, please, more time for Portlanders so that they can become more well-informed on this issue and preserve what makes our city special. Commissioner Salzman, thank you very much for raising the vital question to this project and giving people an opportunity to voice their critiques and their concerns. Mayor Potter, please give time to the citizens so that we can get more current data and discuss the implications of this project of this magnitude with our friends and neighbors. More so, represent Portland. Got to scroll down. As an Oregonian, who understands that in these certain times, a new bridge is not the solution. Instead, build a bridge with the rest of Oregon by allowing our transportation funds to go to other projects in the rest of the state. By voting no now on this resolution, you'll be able to do something that many Portland mayors have not done and send a message to the rest of Oregon that we know they exist and we care about their needs as well, and maybe right now the bridge is not our time. By creating something new, you destroy something old. Before you vote on this bridge, please take the time to have an in-depth dialogue with the residents of the old Portland to see if the cost of this new bridge is really worth it. Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
Next are David Garlock, Bill Burgle, and James Posey. They'll be followed by Faye Birch, John Charles, and Tara Sullivan.
Hi, my name is actually Michael Hansen. David Garlock had to leave for a work emergency and asked me to speak on his behalf. Thanks, all of you, commissioners and mayor, for continuing to listen. A lot of testimony today. I've heard a lot of repetition on both sides of this issue. I came here as an opponent, but now I think I'd like to propose a compromise, and I don't think it's something that I've heard today. I came with objections that you've heard, all of the objections, but I'm also very sensitive to the need for transportation, and we all see that. This project is driven by growth, and our biggest concerns in it really stem from the growth that we can't manage, the growth in Clark County, which is not part of Metro. Now, we've talked a lot about the buts, the yes buts, the conditions that we can put on this moving forward. We've talked about addressing cost. We've talked about addressing mass transit. We've talked about addressing our continuing control over it. But there's a but that encompasses all of those and really speaks well to the future of our region. I think that City Council should make its support of the Columbia River crossing contingent on Clark County joining Metro and establishing an urban growth boundary. There's never been a better time to attempt to use our leverage than now. Clark County wants and needs this bridge. We want and need smart growth. We've certainly tried in the past. There's a long history of attempting this. We don't see eye to eye on everything, but it gives us better leverage than we'd ever have to give them the real comprehensive access to transit, alternative transit, to give us assurances that increased travel times won't just produce more sprawl in northern Clark County. Out of time, please consider it. Thank you.
I'm Bill Burgle. I'm with HDR, and this commentary is going to talk about the railroad bridge, some commentary today to that effect. But basically, I've been in the railroad industry for 38 years. And the railroad industry locally, regionally, and nationally would certainly benefit by an infusion of cash to alleviate the infrastructure bottlenecks in the Portland-Vancouver area. The state of Washington recently put together a rail policy paper that identified this region as one of the bottlenecks to continued rail growth in the Pacific Northwest. However, the local rail industry relies heavily on their symbiotic relationship with the trucking industry to transport goods that last mile. The rail industry is responding to the high fuel prices, and that the economic watershed between the viability of trucking versus rail to make a profit has shifted from a historic 500-mile transit to something more in the 300-mile range. So that's kind of a recent development. So there has been some movement there. I was on the I-5 Trade Corridor Rail Feasibility Study that developed a list of projects that we're now in the process of completing. The net result, should these projects be completed, would be an accommodation of the growth in rail, freight rail traffic, and then the quid pro quo, namely, we'd be able to move more passenger trains to take up the capacity on the Portland-Seattle rail corridor. Both these rail-related projects would add capacity on both sides of the Columbia, and would increase, it would be like a second track, increasing capacity, track speeds, higher speed switches, and yard capacity. Closing and adding grade separations at many of the at-grade crossings are also included in this list of projects. The regional and local impact of higher fuel costs on the choice of transportation modes is a relatively complex issue and would require additional study. The AAR, the Association of American Railroads, recently put together a national rail freight infrastructure and capacity investment study that worked on those issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is James Posey. I'm the president of NAMCO. I think most of you know me. I'm here to actually represent our organization and to talk a little bit about what we are anticipating in terms of this project. We were very, very happy to see the new commissioner, Nick Fish, at our NAMCO meeting last night. It was very exciting to see someone come into our hood, as it were, and really express some sentiments about our participation on this project. It's a very vital project. I do have a statement that I'm not going to read because I think you all will pretty much understand what we're about in terms of this project. But there are three items that I want to talk about briefly, and those items are leadership, specificity, and accountability. Leadership, we've been this way before in terms of talking about minority contracting and so on, et cetera, 20 years or such. And again, it's the express leadership that's going to make a difference. And we're anticipating you as city commissioners will actually follow through on seeing that something actually is achieved relative to this momentous project. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to change the dynamics of the city in terms of its economic impact on minority and women-owned and emerging small businesses. So it is a function of leadership to see that this occurs. I noticed that Mayor Potter, when they got around to the money, you were very specific about the timelines and the guide points and so on. And Mayor Potter, we would like to see the same specificity in terms of how ODOT and TriMet plans to involve minority women, emerging small business in their program. We look for that same specificity. The other final thing is accountability. We know that TriMet has a track record. We're not so sure about the other entities that are going to be involved in this project. So we're looking for front-end accountability. And people can see and talk all they want to. I think Commissioner Fish said last night, talk is cheap. But when we look and we see whether or not there's a program that has those items of leadership, specificity, and accountability, everybody will know you're serious. And we know we will have some outcomes that will be representative of this fine city. And I just want to make mention of this real quickly.
Mr. Posey, your time is up.
I'm sorry, sir. I think you get my point then. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Next are Faye Birch, John Charles, Tara Sulzen, followed by Larry Epstein, Ron Swearin, and Ray Polanyi.
So how many folks are left?
And I'll get that for you.
Okay.
In a moment. Why don't you go ahead and start?
Please go ahead and proceed, folks. State your name when you speak.
Good afternoon. My name is Faye Birch, and I'm going to take up, hopefully, where James Posey left off. I'm also representing National Association of Minority Contractors Oregon. We have 60 members. Several of them were here today but had to leave to meet payrolls and a number of things, and so few of us are left. Our organization is very diverse, both in its membership and its leadership. We formed our local chapter simply because none of our 60 members had ever worked on ODOT projects. So certainly we are very cautious about their leadership role on this particular project. We are very supportive of the CRC moving forward, but we are concerned, as I mentioned, about the management of ODOT. We heard mentioned earlier that ODOT will be taking TriMet's counsel. TriMet has been there all along, and yet and still the information has not exchanged hands. during a 7-year period. I have a report from you from ODOT's disparity study that I'd like to pass along to the clerk for each of you to take a look at. If you take a look at the diversity column, during 7 years, you'll find 2 African Americans that worked on ODOT projects. You might also look at the other ethnic diverse businesses that participated. It's very limited. That represents billions of dollars worth of work. So we are concerned. During a 3-year time period, most recently, members of our organization were involved in $60 million worth of work. We didn't do it all, but we did a portion of it with TriMet. I think that ends my time. If I could just call your attention to one last thing. Thank you. The council under Mayor Vera Katz's leadership with her executive assistant or chief of staff at that time actually decided to vote no on the Interstate Max project until a plan was in place that the people in that community, specifically the minority community, would have an opportunity to participate. And I'm asking you to do the same thing today. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, members of the commission, my name is John Charles, president of Cascade Policy Institute, and there are some parts of this project that I do support. I do think we need a new bridge. I'm glad you've brought in the issue of tolling to pay for it, and specifically electronic tolling, open road tolling, variable pricing, known as congestion pricing. All of those things are good, and I support them. But there might be one misperception stated by Commissioner Adams, based, and I'm glad you went to Stockholm, but you mentioned that you hope that some of the 60,000 people per day as Cross River commuters could shift to light rail if we build this. And that's not possible, even in theory, because light rail is not a high-capacity system. It's high cost, but it's low capacity. I regret to tell you that you've been badly misled by transit planners for the last 10 years to 20 years in this region who insist on calling light rail high-capacity transit. It is not. Just to give you an example, if you go to the foot of the steel bridge where we have 3 lines running after in 22 years, between 6 and 10 in the morning, inbound, you'll have 1 train every 4 minutes. Well, if you look at the busway going off the New Jersey Turnpike through Lincoln Tunnel into New York City for the same period of time, they average 1 bus every 7 seconds. Okay, now that is high-capacity transit. So if any sizable fraction of these 60,000 people wanted to do what you want them to do, the train won't be able to do it. So the other thing that you should probably need to know is that congestion pricing actually can double the throughput of a system, motorized vehicles. And so if you have congestion pricing on the new bridge, what that really means is that's the avenue for express bus service. All those express buses on the 3 lanes would go 60 miles per hour. You just save $1 billion by getting rid of light rail. That's what you need to do. Simple and expensive. It's right there.
Good afternoon. My name is Tara Selzen, and I came here just a year ago with a background in urban planning and policy from the University of Richmond in Virginia. In addition to asking you today to reject the proposal on the table, I'd like to briefly address the topic of induced growth in Clark County. Oregon and Washington have made strides in recent years to reduce our region's carbon footprint, and this 12-lane bridge would make it impossible for us to meet the goal we've set for ourselves of reducing global warming pollution in our region, as you've heard from many people before me today. A new bridge with more lanes would increase vehicle miles traveled by 40% by 2030, and we should be reducing that number. And that is without taking into account future growth into Clark County once the bridge opens. The last time we added capacity across the Columbia was the Glen Jackson Bridge, and projections of travel across the bridge were made for 2000 and 2005. These projections were nearly 50% below actual travel across the bridge in those years. Currently on the I-5 bridge, the ratio of flow of commuters across the bridge from Washington, Oregon is 7-1. Many of these people reside in lower density areas of Clark County and commute in single occupancy vehicles. We cannot build our way out of this congestion. When looking forward, in the case of this new bridge and what travel will look like in years to come, the task force maintains the same land use pattern projections regardless of which bridge option is selected. Even if the new bridge is not built, they project that 93% of commuter trips in 2030 will be from suburban fringe of Clark County into Oregon. Outside of Vancouver, there are 6,600 acres currently farm and forest land zoned for housing development, and isn't it likely that building a much larger new bridge will hasten this development, increasing the ratio of who is using the bridge? So building more capacity will create more sprawl, even if the proposed improvements of transit and biking, and thus I ask you to reject this proposal today and use your leverage as a council. Thank you.
Can I ask a question of Mr. Charles?
Yes.
Please.
So the two questions before us are, one has to do with whether we support a replacement bridge, and the other one has to do with whether we would support light rail. Is it that your testimony and the position of your organization that we should support a replacement bridge but oppose the light rail component?
Correct. Okay.
So my further understanding is that under the New Starts program, the federal program, we're eligible to essentially have the federal government pay most of the cost of the light rail. If we were to take your approach, are there federal dollars available for comparable bus service?
Yes, Commissioner, because the actual capacity, that is the three new lanes in each direction, you could finance all of them 100% through tolling. You wouldn't even need federal money for that. You congestion price with 5, 6, 10 different price points to ensure free flow conditions, as is done elsewhere in the world. Then the only thing you need to make it work is express bus service, so it just means buying some more buses. You can always get help with that through the same system that we talked about for light rail at maybe 1/100th of the cost. That's the low-cost alternative.
Just so I could follow up, assuming we don't rip out the light rail that is already in place to the Expo Center, is it your position that the extension across the river to Clark College and the connecting of Clark County and providing a connection of Clark County to Portland is under no circumstances something we should consider?
If you want to be fiscally responsible, I'd say you should not consider it. It doesn't serve any value. People across the river, if they're transit users, they're express bus users. They don't want to go on a slow train through North Portland. So I would say it was a waste of money to build it in the first place. Stop wasting money.
Thank you.
Thanks, folks.
Thank you for your questions.
The next three are Larry Epstein, Ron Swearin, and Ray Polani. Thank you. They'll be followed by Rick Gill, Roger Savers, and Hannah Fisher.
Go ahead and proceed, folks. State your name when you speak.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, commissioners. My name is Ray Polani. I live at 6110 Southeast Ankeny Street in Portland. In September, my wife and I will have been lived here for 55 years. Today, I speak as an all-time member of Friends of the Earth, the only American environmental organization with worldwide following. We must quit answering the future by continuing the recent past. This is the time for alternatives. This is the time to think and fund transportation as a whole. This is the time to face limits. The signals are unmistakable. We must change. So, upgrade the two existing bridges and build a new, really green bridge to accommodate light rail, local traffic, bicycles, and pedestrians. And, most of all, rebuild the downstream rail bridge to accommodate freight, passengers, and commuter rail. That and light rail are the correct, efficient, relatively frugal answer to the needs of today and tomorrow. The rail line is the equivalent of I-5. By design, it is probably underused by freight, certainly by people. It is less expensive to fix. It is much more benign and efficient. After all, it is the West Coast alternative corridor for both freight and people from Canada to Mexico to Washington, Oregon, and California. Let us use and save scarce resources efficiently. Time to be rational and frugal. do not, I repeat, do not follow groupthink and approve this monstrous, expensive, wasteful 12-lane bridge project for $4.5+ billion, scarce dollars, leading to the past. Thank you.
That was a brilliant comment, Ron Swarren. That's echoing very much of what I would like to say. The Western Arterial had been considered as a potential crossing for quite a number of years in the I-5 partnership, and it was dropped specifically because the CRC did not feel it was within the area that needed to be examined. Now, that's kind of like saying I-205 doesn't factor in as part of the I-5 system because it's not in the area. We're looking at a regional need, and so anything within the region should be considered, and that's been the tack that cities that build ring roads take. We don't necessarily need a ring road. I know the Western Bypass is not a popular idea. That's fine. The Western Arterial route, though, could use existing highways like Highway 30, I-405, and Columbia Boulevard to provide another crossing. We need to get into the 21st century and look at how we can improve rail transit. A bipartisan bill passed in the U.S. Congress to provide research funding for the maglev train. That's an alternative that could provide a better connection between Portland and Seattle, especially as airfares go higher with higher fuel costs. I think it's going to be shown to be a cost-effective solution. That's what most people that analyze it think. I'd like to ask you to examine other cities with comparable geographical situations and ask them if they could utilize only two major crossings. Maybe our mayor-elect should contact the mayor of Philadelphia and ask him if Philadelphia could use only two crossings of the Delaware River instead of seven, or mayor of St. Louis to ask if they could only use two crossings of the Mississippi River instead of five. We need to be realistic about it and have a third crossing. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, I'm Larry Epstein. I represent Diversified Marine, Inc. Diversified Marine builds tugboats and refurbishes tugboats and landing craft and other barges and similar maritime facilities. They are the only tugboat builder in the region. They have built about 24 of them so far, and they've serviced hundreds of ships, small ships, up to 120 feet and 650 tons. They employ 30 people whom they pay $45,000 to $100,000 a year. These are good, skilled blue-collar jobs. There are folks who've been working for the firm since 1994. This is the kind of business Portland wants to keep, and unfortunately, it's one of the businesses that will go if the CRC project is built based on the standard plans, the very preliminary plans that have been published so far. This is the marine facility. It includes a 3/4-acre area on the upland, a 2-acre area that they lease that's storage, and a 2-acre area that they lease that's in the water. They have two big dry docks. They do a lot of work. They're in great demand. They've got work out to 2012. The problem is that the light rail facility will cut them in half, and the marine drive improvements will prevent access to their property. And at this point, the only solution that we see to that is the South Marine Drive realignment that the folks at Metro are concerned about at Merck. But it is a feasible plan. We recommend that you modify your resolution to do what the CRC task force did, which is to recognize that avoiding impacts is better than mitigating them. But when you have to, you minimize those impacts to minimize the mitigation. Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
The next three are Rick Gill, Roger Staver, and Hannah Fisher. They'll be followed by Brendan Castricano, Heather Spalding, and Peter Welt.
Mayor Potter, members of the council, my name is Rick Gill. I am a past president of the Hayden Island Neighborhood Network, also known as High Noon. We are the neighborhood association representing the residents and bulk small businesses on Hayden Island. During the past 2 years, we have participated in numerous meetings, seminars, charrettes, open houses, and hearings that affect Hayden Island's future. We have become well informed on the problems the Columbia River Crossing project intends to solve and the issues it presents. In January, our association voted full support for the replacement bridge with light rail transit alternative. The success of our recently drafted Hayden Island neighborhood plan depends on this alternative. Our reasoning is sound. Current traffic problems on I-5 make public safety at Hayden Island marginal or substandard during many hours of the day. A minor disaster could cost many lives due to the inability to secure timely emergency response or transport. We also add hours a week to our commute times getting on and off of I-5. The replacement bridge alternative creates longer on-off ramps at Hayden Island where traffic hazards and bottlenecks are today. It also removes existing impediments that prevent effective east-west travel on the island. The light rail transit alternative keeps the direct route between Hayden Island and downtown Portland that we have now with mass transit. The bus rapid transit alternative takes this direct route away from Hayden Island. This is not just a new bridge project with a single solution to a single problem that only benefits Hayden Island. It is a construction project with multiple solutions that work together to solve a myriad of problems for more than 5 miles of an existing interstate highway in Oregon and Washington. If we don't solve all the problems, then we don't achieve the goal. The timing of this construction project is a rare situation when an opportunity is presented to accommodate long-term requirements while fixing already insurmountable problems that become worse each year. Please join us in supporting the replacement bridge with light rail transit alternative. Thank you.
I'm Roger Staber, 11638 North Island Cove Lane. That's the floating home community. I'm here as president of High Noon. High Noon is the neighborhood association representing the residents on Hayden Island as well as the small businesses there. High Noon supports the replacement bridge and light rail with the configuration of light rail being adjacent to I-5. As Rick just said, we've spent a lot of time with this. We've been studying it. It is a critical and integral part of our concept plan, the comprehensive plan that will be adopted for Hayden Island. We've never had a comprehensive plan before, and without CRC, we can't adopt the plan that we've worked on for over a year now. We don't support the idea of terminating light rail on Hayden Island. Land's at a premium there. We really hope to see whatever land might be left over when the project is done being dedicated to public areas and parks, which we have few of at this point in time. We prefer the light rail to continue on to Vancouver without having a terminus at Hayden Island. We're very concerned about the displacement of the small businesses and the residences. As we understand, there could be as many as 50 or 55 floating homes affected by the project during its construction, and ultimately somewhere around a dozen or more that will be lost entirely. We are eager to see this project move forward. We are fully supportive of it. We are eager to see our concept plan implemented, and we'd like to see this all done with as little delay as possible. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Brendan Castricano. I'm actually here on behalf of Hannah Fisher. Hannah Fisher is the elected student body president for Portland State University, and I'm a student senator. I'm also here with three other student senators from Portland State University. Just right over here, there's Heather Spalding, Amina Ali, and Peter Welty. We are here today to represent, we are here to represent the elected student government at Portland State University, which is a commuter school, school of some 25,000 students, as I'm sure you all know. And again, these are students who, in the coming decades, will largely inherit the legacy of the decisions for this project. We still believe it is very possible for Portland to retain its role as a leader in sustainability, and as such, we are deeply concerned about the conflicting reports regarding the environmental impact of the Columbia River crossing here. As such, our Student Senate, as well as the Student Executive Branch under President Hannah Fisher, have signed a referendum stating support for Commissioner Saltzman and his suggestion for an independent analysis of the project's projected global warming pollution, traffic, and land use patterns. Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
Heather and Pete.